Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciate you joining us this fine day in America. We are proud Americans, and we should be. Here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking about race with Professor Andre Archie. Then Marines Gill and Skip will present The Border in Books. And of course, we'll conclude with military history and our self-defense report. It's an honor to welcome Professor Andre Archie. Sir, with Martin Luther King Day coming up this Monday, I'm delighted you could join us today to discuss race in our nation. I've got Black friends and family members, and I really believe and subscribe to Dr. King's position on race. Your recent articles show that you feel the same way, at least in some things. So thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate you.
Sure, Dennis. Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to the talk.
Now start by telling us your background. How did you end up as a professor?
So I ended up as a professor because I had mentors who encouraged me to pursue the life of the mind. So I attended Colorado State University as an undergraduate. I followed my sister there. She wanted to be a vet. It has a great vet school among other colleges and schools there. Ended up meeting a mentor by the name of Bill Hervey and went off to graduate school in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, got my master's and PhD in philosophy, and I specialized in the Greeks. So that's history, if you will. And it was the mentoring that I got. And so I enjoy what I do. Colorado State University is a great institution, and I look forward to being there for a while.
Wow. If you got a PhD and you majored in the Greeks, then you actually had to think, didn't you?
Exactly. And, you know, I love doing it, and I love the Greeks and among other branches of philosophy as well.
Okay. Our topic today is race issues in our military, in our nation. And I had regular contact with Black men when I got in the Army, not before. I found them to be just people like the white, Hispanic, and Asian guys that I knew. Most of the ones I served with in the military were very good soldiers and officers, and I saw no difference. But I know I'm a bit naive, because when I talk to my friends who are Black, they talk about the bias that's there. And I know from experience, from other kinds of things, that sometimes you see bias because you're looking for it, and other times, whether you're looking for it or not, it's there, and sometimes both. Your approach to race is to be colorblind. I love that. It sounds easy to say, I bet it's hard to do. Talk to us about that. What is it?
Yeah, so I just released my book was just published by Regnery Gateway. It's titled The Virtue of Colorblindness. And so when we think about colorblindness, we think about Martin Luther King Jr. and his proposition that we should treat all people according to their character, not by the color of their skin. And so my opponents, those who disagree with me regarding colorblindness, argue, well, that's pretty naive. Well, it's not naive at all. In fact, it's a part of our tradition. We fought for that tradition. What does that mean? That means that there are a couple of factors that are entailed in the proposition that we should judge others by the content of their character, that we should be colorblind. And that is that liberty is good in and of itself. It's something that we're born with. We have God-given talents. It doesn't mean we have equal outcomes, but we have those talents, and we need to put those talents to work as best we can, given our circumstances. And so liberty is one of the principles that inform colorblindness. So we need to give each other the benefit of the doubt insofar as we need to see their character through their actions. And they do that, and we do that, because we have a sense of liberty, that people are in control of themselves and their destiny. Of course, there are external factors that might limit our ability to express our capabilities, but nonetheless, we are free to do that. And so liberty, first and foremost, is very important in terms of colorblindness. The other thing that goes along with liberty is personal agency. So we can't have personal agency without liberty, but personal agency is the locus of moral capacities, the moral capacities that we have as human beings. So given all of that, when we say that we need to be colorblind, it entails other things, which means that we should judge a person. It's just like when we say we shouldn't judge a book by its cover. We need to judge a person based upon their character. And in general, sometimes it is difficult to do that. But what we do now is we say that there are victims, people of color, African-Americans in particular, and there are victimizers, white people. So we have these groups of people that we automatically assume that one's an oppressor and the other is the oppressed. And so that sort of orientation is counter to the tradition that I focus on in my book, and also contrary to the Western philosophical tradition, and each of those traditions I discuss in my book as it relates to colorblindness. So I don't think it's naive at all to judge, or at least to attempt to judge people by the content of their character. What we're doing today is just the opposite. We see a person of color, we see a white person, and we automatically assume that one's guilty and one's innocent. And by doing that, we make things worse, we become more conscious of race, and that's pernicious, and I think it's dangerous.
And we're sort of moving the wrong way. We were doing a fair job of moving away from the bias and stuff of the Civil War days, but we seem to have turned the corner and going back. Am I wrong?
I think you're absolutely right. And so the individuals that I discuss in the book, so you might have heard of Ibram X. Kendi, critical race theory, anti-racism. Anti-racism in particular is associated with Ibram X. Kendi. But there's a number of individuals that have dominated the public square when it comes to race. I directly challenge those individuals in my book, The Virtue of Colorblindness. But these individuals have really monopolized the conversation on race, both in the primary, secondary, and post-secondary levels. And I think that's where it becomes dangerous, because when you have it at the elementary level, you have it at the post-secondary level, you really get both ends of society. You get the young and you get the college kids. And so there, in those two places, we hear a lot about privilege, which groups are privileged, that in fact, we should be conscious of our privilege or our lack of privilege. And we treat other people according to the amount of privilege that they have. And what we end up doing is discriminating. And so I think with the recent affirmative action decision, I think that's a positive development. But we have an entitlement mentality that was created over nearly 40, 50 years based upon affirmative action and other like-minded policies. So I think that we need to uproot certain ways of thinking regarding people, regarding this idea of privilege. We need to completely get rid of DEI, anti-racism, and we need to challenge those who argue that America is systemically racist. And so, yes, we are moving in the wrong direction, but I think there are positive developments that's starting to push back against that way of thinking.
Well, that's important. And yes, there are people in America that object to this, but too many Americans on all subjects that they disagree with are silent and don't step up and do something. And I think this is one of them.
Oh, exactly. And that's one of the chapters I have in the book called Comfortable Racism. It's the idea of anti-racism coupled with just a racial exhaustion. People just throwing their hands up and saying, fine, let the anti-racists talk about what they want to talk about. At least our kids will learn something about our past. And I say, no, wait a minute. We need to speak up because we know it's wrong. It's intuitive to treat people according to their character, their actions. I think it's intuitive. Again, it goes back to that idea of liberty, moral agency. And if it's intuitive, then we need to remind people the tradition that we've fallen away from, or at least that we're getting away from. So when we celebrate MLK, I think we need to keep that in mind, because we can't celebrate MLK and celebrate Kendi and his idea of anti-racism. They just don't go together. So I think a lot of Americans agree with us, Dennis, but they're not speaking up. And so my book hopefully gives them the courage to speak up. They don't have to speak to millions of people, right? They don't have to write a book even, but they at least have to speak to their neighbors and other like-minded people, because there's a lot of agreement. It's sort of a silent majority. And I think, again, things are starting to change. But with the publication of my book and shows like yours, I think that we're putting up a pretty good fight.
Yes, sir. And one of the things we have to do is make sure our kids know where we stand and find out what the kids are being taught in school and deal with that. But certainly the family should be setting this up.
I agree with you 100%.
There's more to discuss about race, and Professor Archie will stay with us. This is Colonel Danny Gilliam on Front Lines of Freedom. It's time to do some deep knee bends. Troops, go, okay, halfway down each time. Do 40. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. I'll be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
Military leaders have called our national debt the greatest threat facing America, and for good reason. We're more than $32 trillion in debt and counting.
Meanwhile, Congress continues to throw money at the Pentagon and Veterans Affairs with no idea if the money is reaching its intended targets.
Concerned Veterans for America fights for more responsible spending from Washington so Americans remain safe and prosperous in the future.
Visit cbafrontlines.com to learn more and join the movement. That's cbafrontlines.com.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Professor Andre Archie on racism in America. Professor, this was just, it's a huge issue, and I'm so glad that we can be talking about this, because we Americans, it's our country, and if we don't take charge, if we don't take responsibility for setting values in the right direction, who else is supposed to? It's our country. We're responsible. So let's talk about what's going on and what we can do. Let's continue that. Thank you.
You bet. Before we left off in the first segment, you mentioned the family. I think the family's key. I think there's a lot of broken families that are sort of grasping in terms of their children and what we teach them. Because a lot of families, because they're struggling, they can't spend the time with their children or child to teach them certain things. And I get that. But I do think that it's within the family that we develop a love of country, neighborhood first, community, and then country. And I think there's a lot of families, particularly African-American families, that are fatherless. I really think that's the key in terms of the African-American family. And I think it's there that we have a grasping after some of these racial ideologies. Because it fills a void, you know, either perhaps it's gangs or other types of behaviors, or it's being attracted to things like anti-racism or this idea of racial separateness or affinity groups. I think affinity groups are quite widespread in institutions today, both at the primary and secondary level, levels, post-secondary. And you get together in these groups based upon your ethnicity or your race, and other children aren't necessarily excluded. But of course, it's unspoken that it's for this particular group. So my point in mentioning that is that the family, I think, first and foremost, is at the root of a lot of these issues. And so I think if we can promote healthy families, ideally healthy nuclear families, some of these issues regarding race will minimize, especially as it relates to the African-American community. So I think the family is very important.
Yes, sir. I totally agree. And the research I have done has shown in the last at least 20, 30 years, between 2/3 and 3/4 of all Black children born are born into single-parent families. And that's something that, how do we impact that?
Yeah, that's a tough issue. I mean, I have a chapter dedicated to the family as it relates to African Americans, but there's a couple of things that we can do. I mean, we have marriage initiatives. I think that in Florida, there's some things being tried. I think as a society, we no longer, we don't talk about shame. Now, I know some people associate shame with being mean and making people feel bad. But as a society, it once upon a time, we people felt shame regarding their actions, their public actions, or their private actions that became public or a public concern. And I think one of those is fathers deserting families. So I think that there's a number of things that can be done. We can sort of speculate as to what's some of those things are. As I mentioned, marriage initiatives. But I do think it's an internal issue among African Americans that we need to figure out. It doesn't mean that external forces or things outside of the community can't be helpful. But I do think that there has to be a value placed upon the nuclear family in a way that perhaps isn't quite there yet. I mean, historically, it's been there. And I get into some of this in the book as it relates to Frederick Douglass and as it relates to some of the issues that we've gone through as a country. The African-American family has been a bulwark, if you will, to protect its members from racism and from the external world and issues that might affect them in terms of race. I mean, all of that's good. I mean, that's what a family does. It protects. But when you have a broken family, you leave your members exposed. And I think there is where we have a lot of African Americans attracted to ideologies of race precisely because of that vulnerability regarding the family. And so perhaps my next book will specifically focus on ways to make the or enhance the institution of the family as it relates to African Americans. But in this book in particular, I just mention a few initiatives that might be helpful. But I do think that's at the root of a lot of the race issues.
Well, the important thing is none of us are perfect.
Right.
All we can do is do the best we can with who we are and where we are. And if we as Americans will decide that we are going to do the best we can for ourselves, our families, and our neighborhood and our communities, that can move mountains, in my experience.
Oh, I agree with you. And I think that, you know, the conversation we're having, it seems so sensical to me. I mean, it boggles my mind that someone would tune in to our conversation and disagree with us. And I think that we're the majority. I think that there are those who are in positions of power and they argue the opposite. I think they do that because of other ulterior motives, either power, prestige, or they're just afraid to speak up. But I just think what we're talking about are the type of things that we sit around the dinner table as Americans and we discuss. It's just that these dinner conversations that you and I are having, let's say, they're not spoken out loud, and they need to be, because we're going to save the country. We're going to save the country insofar as we're going to remind Americans that we're all united. And when you think about this, the second paragraph of the Declaration of Independence, that's what unites us, right? That's what unites us.
Yes.
We're all equal. We have certain rights. We can pursue happiness. We can't be alienated from certain principles. And so the conversation that we're having needs to be multiplied. It needs to be spoken out loud, because I don't think we're saying anything that's radical. And so my position is that if others speak up in the way that we are, things will certainly change and things will certainly get better in terms of how we discuss race.
Yes, sir. We could talk on and on and on, Dr. Archie, but we're about out of time. You mentioned you've got a book. Talk to us about that book and how people can buy a copy.
Yeah, so I would go to Amazon. The title of it is The Virtue of Colorblindness. It was just published on the 2nd of January. And I really encourage your listeners to get the book, read it. I try to provide a roadmap to how we can discuss these issues. I talk about the historical development of the principles of our founding and how that's informed the African-American community and its struggle to gain civil rights and to be treated equal before the law. But then I connect that to the sort of the Western philosophical tradition and the principles there that really emphasize the importance of colorblindness. So I try to combine all these threads in a way that make it accessible in terms of how we discuss race. So I'd say Amazon is the best place. You can go to Barnes & Noble, Target, but it's widely available. But please take a look at it and think about it. And perhaps I'll come back and we can talk more. The Virtue of Colorblindness.
Yes, sir. And is there if people would like to, listeners would like to get in touch with you, is there a way to do that?
They can email me at andre.archie@colostate.edu. I'm pretty good about responding to emails. So I can be reached via my university email, and we can go from there.
Sounds great. Dr. Archie, thank you. Thank you for sharing these really appropriate insights. You're providing a great service to our nation. I hope this is the beginning of a friendship, because I certainly feel like we share a whole lot of values. I hope you'll come back again to be on the show again.
I'll come back, and thanks for inviting me. And I appreciate your service. And this idea of liberty is very important. And I hope your listeners take that away from my book, because I try to emphasize that. But I really appreciate the invite, and I will come back.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, Marines Gil and Skip will present The Border and Books. Then we'll open our weekly mailbag. Troops, I hope you are giving serious thought to buying gold and silver to keep your future more secure. Check out Universal Coin. That's where I go. Check universalcoin.com/Denny. universalcoin.com/Denny. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm. Then take a break, but stay in the area. I'll be right back.
HelpVet.net is here to help all veterans, active military, and families. HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with their everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, discounted services, or information on retirement benefits, financial resources, and much more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all your needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net. Never forget, never forgotten.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. And now it's time for the Marine B&B. Marine vet Gil Mazza, a retired border patrolman, will discuss our nation's southern border. Welcome, Gil.
Thank you, sir.
And Marine vet and author Skip Coriel, who's been goofing off for a couple of weeks. He's really walking wounded, but he joined us, and he's going to discuss an interesting book. Glad you're able to gimp on, Skip.
Well, Colonel, I'll do the best I can with what I got, okay?
Amen, brother. Okay, Gil, you're up. Given the millions of unknowns that have crossed and are crossing our border, how can there be anything but more crime here?
Well, the biggest thing is that when we're in day 1,085, and I'm not counting, okay, of the most disastrous and catastrophic taxpayer-funded illegal immigration invasion in the history of this country. And the beauty of it is that now Elon Musk is going out and saying, how can it be anything but intentional? Intentional. And while today House Republicans seek to impeach DHS Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, which basically won't come to anything but political theater, and while Americans have sat there, we've sat there and watched all-time record unvetted illegals being mass processed and released across the country, including over 100,000, okay, special interest group aliens, which we have no idea where they are. Guess how Secretary Mayorkas summarized 2023?
What'd he say?
Quote, "Our communities are safer and more resilient. Our economy is more secure, and our government is more prepared thanks to the unprecedented work of the DHS workforce." Unquote.
What country was he talking about?
I'm not sure. But by the end of this administration's term, Colonel, there's an estimated upwards of 50 million illegal aliens present in the United States. Okay? Not that tired 22 million number that they've been giving us for 20 years. But you have to ask yourself why. And the answer is plain and simple: power. Yesterday, New York Congresswoman Yvette Clark, she said it, the quiet part out loud. I need more people in my district just for redistricting purposes. And I'll let you guess what party she's from.
I guess illegals don't count until they become legal, or at least until their kids become.
No, sir. No, sir. The U.S. Census has to count illegal aliens as part of the population by U.S. law. And that already affects the Electoral College numbers from each state. And right. And already, I think there's like six states that have already been altered due to the presence of illegal aliens. Now, imagine adding another 50 million to the mix.
Wow.
Now, add to that the fact that Democrats plan to give every single illegal present in America today amnesty, thus citizenship, and ask yourself, who do you think they're going to vote for?
Okay. I guess it gets pretty obvious when you lay out the facts, doesn't it?
And even worse, Colonel, who do you think, if it hits the fan, they're going to fight for?
Yep. And so even if we could stop the border right now, it's already beyond belief.
Well, think about it this way. Think about one foundational institution in America that hasn't already been irrevocably altered, right, forever by illegal immigration. The damage is already done. We're going to be dealing with this for decades to come, no matter who gets elected next.
You're just all full of happy stuff today, aren't you, Gil?
Happy New Year, Skip.
Well, I guess it's fair to say that there's a good reason why every single listener, every single citizen of the United States needs to get in regular contact with his congressmen and U.S. senators and say, stop this. Stop it now.
Well, if I can throw something in the mix, I'm going to say we better start thinking about some serious election and voting reform ASAP, quickly.
Yes, 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 yes. And that's going to take some serious doing. But if we don't start now, our grandkids are going to be suffering from this, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing about it is that I think the last landslide election won was by 17 million votes. We have few times that much already in illegal aliens. And I promise you, it's not if or can they vote. It's when will they be allowed to vote, because one of the parties is really desperate to make sure they're able to vote before this next election.
Well said, brother. Wow. Folks, I hope everybody's thinking about that. And this is not something you can put off. This is something that you need to be getting involved with now.
Mm-hmm.
Gil, thank you. I mean, I really appreciate you, even if you are a Marine.
Well, you know, it's always have the Marines deliver the bad news.
Uh-huh. I hope you're having a great new year and taking good care of my home state of California.
Well, they're trying to take care of me, I can tell you that.
That I believe. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're doing Marine B&B with Gil and Skip. Skip, you're up. I'm glad that you're feeling well enough to be on the show. The book is Shelby Foote's Volume 1 in the History of the Civil War. Is that right?
Yeah, Colonel, that's right. Believe it or not, I had never read it before. I mean, it's been around since... I think the third volume was finished in 1978, the first one in the 1950s. This is a huge thing. You know, what happened, Random House publisher came to him because he was a novelist, historical novelist, and they wanted him to write a brief history of the Civil War. And he said, okay, sure, I'll take your money, I'll do that. And he started doing it, and then he had to go back to them and say, listen, this is impossible. I can't do a brief history, but I can, you know, give you a full history of the Civil War. It took him almost 25 years to write a three-volume set called The Civil War, A Narrative History. It was just amazing. The full thing, all three volumes, is over 1.2 million words, almost 3,000 pages. I haven't read the entire thing yet. I'm almost done with volume one. It's like the Tolstoy's War and Peace of military history. It's really, really good. But I think most importantly, it's changing the way I've always viewed the Civil War. You know, both the North and the South, we all have these ideas, you know, whether we get them through public school or whatever. But I guess the biggest thing for me is I'm realizing that there were 100 different reasons that people fought the Civil War.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't just to free the slaves. It wasn't just to save the Union. And on the Southern side, it wasn't just to keep their slaves and all of that. There were hundreds of different reasons. A lot of these big generals from the South, they weren't necessarily pro-slavery. Some of them were anti-slavery, but they just couldn't bring themselves to fight against their home. And back then in 1860, people didn't view themselves as Americans. They viewed themselves as Virginians or Georgians or Pennsylvanians. You were loyal to your state. And it had been that way ever since the American Revolution. So it's changing how I view the Civil War and all the people that fought it. The details in this book are incredible. It's overwhelming. I may have to listen to it 4 or 5 times before I die to get it all figured out. But it is just awesome. The people come to life. All these generals, most of these generals on the North and the South, most of them went to West Point together. They Yes. knew each other, which made it very interesting because, you know, they would figure that in when they were facing one of their friends. They go, oh, I think George would do it this way. And it was, you know, Sun Tzu, know your enemy. They intimately knew their enemy. On the downside, it's like they were fighting their friends, and they may have loved the other man that they were fighting, but they still had to do their duty to either the Union or to their state.
You're 100% right on, brother, and most people don't know that. Skip, thank you for that insight. Name the book again.
All right. The book is by Shelby Foote. It's called The Civil War, A Narrative.
Thank you, Skip. We're good at putting up with each other, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
And just thank
report,
you.
Bill. Report to sick bay and make sure you're still going to do Firewatch tonight, though.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And thanks for taking the time to join us today, Gil. And thank you for your service to our nation.
Thank you, Colonel. I appreciate that.
God bless you guys. Until next time. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You reported for duty to Front Lines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups, about 64 this time. I want your Ranger ready. Then stand at ease. In business for over 30 years with over $1 billion in sales, Universal Coin and Bullion is my go-to source for gold and silver coins. And right now, they're offering our listeners a newly minted 0.999 fine 1 ounce 2024 American Eagle coin for just $27. Call 1-800-UCB-GOLD or go to their website at universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny.
Friends, Adam here, Patriot Foods, U.S. only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer. When you shop at patriotfoods.com, we give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off patriotfoods.com. 10% off promo code FREEDOM and shop today.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Front Lines of Freedom. Troops, I do a bit of coin collecting. Universal Coin is the dealer of the year for the National Numismatic Association. It's a great place to go for coins and a great place to go to purchase silver and gold. Go to universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. Roland, what's the first comment?
Well, Kent, a Marine vet, can't believe all the mostly young people who hate Jews in Israel. If it's bigoted to abuse blacks, isn't it bigoted to abuse Jews? How can this be happening?
Kent, it is horrible. I believe the bulk of it comes from our school system and parents who don't pay attention to what the schools teach. Yeah, it's bigotry.
And then Harry, who's a Navy dad, really enjoyed last week's show, and he's glad to see some real science and thinking being presented.
Harry, I agree. Real science is what we need, and there's not a lot of it, unfortunately. Okay, now it's time for military history. Take us there, Roland. What's first?
Well, on 17 January 1865, during the Civil War, General Sherman's army was reined in at Savannah, Georgia, as it waited to march into the Carolinas. In the fall of 1864, Sherman and his army marched across Georgia and destroyed nearly everything in their path. Sherman reasoned that the war would end sooner if the conflict were taken to the civilian South, a view shared by President Lincoln. Sherman's men tore up railroads, burned grain stores, carried away livestock, and left plantations in ruin. The Yankees captured the port of Savannah just before Christmas, and Sherman paused for 3 weeks to rest his troops and resupply his force. He planned to move on to the Carolinas and subject those states to the same brutal treatment that Georgia received. His 60,000 troops were divided into two wings. General Howard was to move northeast to Charleston, South Carolina, while General Slocum was to move northwest towards Augusta, Georgia. These were just diversions to the main target, Columbia, South Carolina. As Sherman was preparing to move, the rains began. And on January 17th, the Yankees waited while heavy rains pelted the region. The downpour lasted for 10 days, the heaviest rainfall in 20 years. Sherman wrote to his wife that he, quote, never saw a more confident army. The soldiers think I know everything and that they can do anything, unquote. Then Sherman conducted a campaign against South Carolina that was worse than that against Georgia. Sherman wanted to exact revenge on the state that had led secession and started the war by firing on Fort Sumter.
You know, he also had in mind that if the citizens were suffering, they'd stop supporting the war through their government. Good point. And on 18 January 1960, Communist China formally recognized the Communist Democratic Republic of Vietnam and agreed to furnish military assistance. The Soviet Union extended diplomatic recognition to Hanoi on the 30th of January. China and the Soviet Union provided massive military and economic aid to North Vietnam, which enabled them to fight first the French and then us. Chinese aid between 1950 and 1970 estimated at $20 billion. You know, it's thought that China provided approximately three quarters of the total military aid given to Hanoi since 1949, end of World War II. With the Soviets providing most of the rest. It would have been impossible for the North Vietnamese to continue the war without this aid.
Kind of interesting that people now go to Vietnam for vacation.
I don't.
I can't imagine why not. Okay, on 17 January 1961, in his farewell address to the nation, President Dwight Eisenhower warned the American people to keep a careful eye on what he called the, quote, military-industrial complex that had been developed in the post-World War II years. A fiscal conservative, Eisenhower had been concerned about the growing size and cost of the American defense establishment since he became president in 1953. In his last presidential address to the American people, he expressed those concerns. Eisenhower began by describing the changing nature of the American defense establishment since World War II. No longer could we afford the emergency improvisations that characterized its preparations for war against Germany and Japan. Instead, the U.S. was compelled to create a permanent armaments industry, a huge military force. He admitted that the Cold War made clear the imperative need for this development. In particular, he asked the American people to guard against the danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific technological elite. Eisenhower's blunt language stunned some of his supporters. For most listeners, however, it seemed clear that he was merely stating the obvious. He warned this new military-industrial complex could weaken or even destroy the very institutions and principles it was designed to protect.
And he was right. And on 19 January 1977, President Gerald Ford pardoned Tokyo Rose. Although the nickname originally referred to several Japanese women who broadcast Axis propaganda over the radio to Allied troops during World War II, it eventually became synonymous with a Japanese-American woman named Iva Toguri, ordered by the Japanese government, Taguri and other women broadcast sentimental American music and phony announcements regarding U.S. troop losses in a vain attempt to destroy the morale of American soldiers. As an American citizen born in Los Angeles, Taguri was in Japan when Pearl Harbor was bombed. She graduated from UCLA in 1940 and hoped to become a doctor. When an elderly aunt living in Japan became ill, Taguri's family sent her to take care of the aunt. She left in July 1941 carrying an identification card but no passport. When the rumblings of war reached a crescendo later that year, she tried to return to the U.S. but couldn't because she didn't have proof of her citizenship.
I wonder what would have happened if she would have been back, you know, allowed back into the country.
Well, probably the Japanese couldn't have used her. I don't know.
And on 16 January 1991, at midnight in Iraq, the UN deadline for the Iraqi withdrawal from Kuwait expired, and the Pentagon prepared to commence an offensive operation to forcibly eject Iraq from its five-month occupation of its oil-rich neighbor. At 4:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the first fighter aircraft were launched from Saudi Arabia and off U.S. and British aircraft carriers in the Persian Gulf on bombing missions all over Iraq. All evening, aircraft from the U.S.-led military coalition pounded targets in and around Baghdad as the world watched the events transpire in television footage transmitted live via satellite from Baghdad and elsewhere. At 7 p.m., Operation Desert Storm, the code name for the massive U.S.-led offensive against Iraq, was formally announced at the White House.
And that began the war. And that's military history for today. Now it's time for a self-defense report. Take us there, Roland.
Well, all of us here at Frontlines of Freedom want listeners to get trained and get armed in that order. We fully support the right to keep and bear arms for all law-abiding families, and we encourage you to find out about the laws governing the use of deadly force in your state and follow them to the letter. And of course, don't forget to follow the rules of safety and common sense whenever you're carrying a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
On January 5th, 2023, a man walked into the Houston, Texas Ranchito No. 4 Tarkari at around 11:30 p.m. Witnesses told officers that he was wearing all black clothing, a black ski mask, and black gloves. He strode in confidently, waving what appeared to be a firearm at customers while demanding their money, according to Houston police. The customers all complied with his demands, but halfway through the robbery, one of the customers drew his own gun and fired 9 rounds into the assailant, where he died at the scene. The armed citizen then collected the stolen money and returned it to the rifle owners.
Thanks, Colonel. I'm sure most of you have already heard of this story and perhaps even viewed the video of the event. Even as a military veteran, I found this video difficult to watch as it was very graphic. And I have mixed feelings about this incident. On the one hand, I'm glad none of the victims were hurt. On the other, I wish the armed citizen had done a few things differently. Let's break it down so you understand what I'm talking about. The counter-ambush by the armed citizen was perfect. He waited for a tactical advantage before opening fire. Then he fired 4 rounds in the center of exposed mass. That was good too. But then things started to get questionable. There was a pause. And then while the robber was laying face down on the floor, the citizen pumped 4 more rounds into his body. The citizen then approached the robber, who was no longer moving, took away his pistol, and then shot him once more at point-blank range. Just this past week, a Texas grand jury chose not to bring any charges against the armed citizen. I choose to review this incident because some people out there are going to think this is typical, but it's really not. I'm no lawyer, but it's my opinion, and that in many states, the grand jury would have recommended murder charges. So here's a better way to do it. Shoot 4 times center of exposed mass. Reevaluate to see if further rounds are needed. The basic rule is this: shoot until the threat stops. After viewing the video a dozen times, it was obvious to me that the man was dying and no longer posed a threat. So don't approach the robber to disarm him until you know for sure that he's no longer a threat. Stay behind cover. Call 911. In this case, the citizen left without even notifying the police. Always call 911 and ask for police and medical services. You know, this citizen got away with this shooting simply because he was in Texas. But in a more liberal jurisdiction, he probably wouldn't have. You know, Frontlines of Freedom is glad no innocent citizens were hurt in this incident. And while we're not happy the robber was killed, we're not going to lose any sleep over it either.
That's quite a story. And I think I agree with with you on that, Roland. The movie of the month is Cape May County. You can go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link, and you can watch it for free. And I'd really appreciate getting your comments on the movie. Send your comments to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Frontlines of Freedom, Ambassador John Bolton will share his views on our nation's challenges. Then veteran Gabe Evans will discuss his time in the military and his plans for continuing service. And General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. And now it's available in Spanish. You can purchase that book on frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Amazon. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans. And do get active in correcting our nation. Plug into Concerned Veterans for America. Go to cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Thank you, friends, for joining us on Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of the show, well, you're in luck. All of our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information you will not get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Dismissed.